What's the latest?
I just hosted the second retreat.
You did.
It was incredible.
How was it different than the first?
I would say in the first one, people were ready to express more. Mm-hmm. And in this one, people were just becoming aware. So if you look at the pattern of like awareness, expression, mm-hmm. compassion, creating a new pattern. And it felt like in the first one, people were had done more work on themselves.
Yeah.
Thank you. And we're ready to express. And in this one, it was like people were more just gaining awareness for those things. And it was incredible. But I feel the first time I was very much like, oh my God, I found my life's work. Like having sex for the first time, just like, this was incredible, like love. Yeah. And now it's more like, found my life's work.
More grounded and just
peace.
Yeah.
Just like, this is what I'm here to do.
Wow.
So.
And so you were called to kind of show up differently in the second one.
Yeah. I mean, I that piece came about because I just saw transformation after transformation after transformation after transformation. I'm just like, all right, like, thank you, God. I don't know what else to do except just keep doing them. And I feel really blessed.
So when's the next one?
May 23rd through 26th. And I might put one in before then.
You're just feeling it.
Yeah.
How many people have been attending?
First one was 15 total, including myself. And yeah. This one is 12.
Yeah. That feels like, is there a sweet spot? I know you've done two, but I feel like you don't want it too big because then your ability to show up becomes a little bit diluted, you know? And so I wonder how that like 12 to 15, are you capping it somewhere?
Yeah. Probably cap it at 15.
Yeah.
But just feel so blessed to be able to find something like that and feel very humbled to witness it because, yeah.
Do you have any co-facilitators or anybody in support or?
There's the chef who could be hosting the retreat himself and just came about by circumstantial, hosts men's circles and so brilliant, so wise. And it's like, I maybe could use some assistance.
Yeah.
But overall, I'm like, this is my life. Like, what is happening? You know, I started this podcast almost 4 years ago.
Yeah.
With just like, I love having conversations with people.
Yeah.
And now I'm having conversations with people, but those conversations are leading to other people having conversations with other people. Yeah. And I'm just creating the space for the conversation to happen.
Yeah.
It's like.
Well, yeah, it is a bit of an extension of the podcast in that way, because when you put out an episode, there are people who listen and then they will talk about what they heard and then they'll share it. And so there's that element. But you're also bringing it into a much more intimate space. And then you're really a part of their experience in a different way. And so you're kind of being called to this, you know, deeper. I always look at the podcast for me, it's a way, like there are many aspects to it, right? There's so much learning for me and to be curious with whoever I bring on and to really try to mine some nuggets out of it for me to take away from, and then invariably the audience does. But what I found is I love coaching and I love kind of what you're doing. And it was a way for me to coach in a way, in a much bigger way than one-on-one. And so I'm also finding, particularly with the solo cast I put out a couple of weeks ago, I've had so many people reach out and friends I haven't talked to in a long time, wanting to get on a call or reflect because of what, you know, kind of the resonance was for that podcast. And it feels good. Like, you know, as we talked about when you came on my podcast, I was in this 3 years of not really feeling like putting myself out there in that way. And now I'm ready for it because I have some grounding. I understand largely what I've been through the last 3 to 5 years and have been able to sort of integrate that. And so when I put that journey out there, and men in particular find themselves in some part of that journey, I'm able to kind of hold space for them in a way that, feels really good and really easy. Just like I'm sure, like when you're holding these retreats, people are like, how do you do it by yourself? It's like, you just show up and you're just led by what is inspiring to you.
Yeah.
That's I love that.
Exactly right. And you know, when I went on your podcast, I was like, whoa, this is me. This is my dad. And this is, it was no version of a pedestal at all. Mm-hmm. It was just like such a respect for your presence, such a respect for how intentional you were about everything about the space, and a reverence for your ability to have an agenda and then just be like, me to answer the first question, to be like, that's not at all what I'm doing here. And for you to be able to flow with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is such a rare gift that you have. And I just felt it in your eyes, like, wow, this dude is so present, so caring, so loving, and also masculine, traditionally masculine. Because I think all those things are masculine, but the traditional masculine qualities, it's like to have both of those is such a rare thing. And I was like, thank you, God, for delivering this man to me to help explain me in some way. Because I think the people we admire, there's like something in us that is also that. And so,
dude, if you spot it, you got it. That's what they say. Yeah.
So tell me, I want to know everything about you. And I know you were a trader on Wall Street. And I'm curious, like, at what point did you have this awakening?
Yeah, so I had, I guess, a few mini awakenings along the way, but I would say I spent 18 years in Chicago as a trader. I had a trading firm. I was partners with a couple other guys. And from 95 until 2013, that's what I did. And I loved it for a long time. And it really suited me. I kind of fell into it because I got no other job offers out of college. And at the end of my senior year, my eventual partner, Will Hobart, came to my school, interviewed a bunch of us, and I got the job. And I was like, I don't really know what this is, but it sounds cool and I'll go do it. So I did that for like I said, for 18 years. And near the end, this was kind of my first awakening. Being a partner, there are certain responsibilities you have. And one of those is showing up. And, you know, I was physically showing up, and emotionally, I was completely detached for probably the last 18 months. And I felt a lot of guilt around that. And I didn't know how to solve for it because I was completely uninspired. I felt like a bit of a fraud because here I am a partner and I'm just going through the motions. And I was reading David Data's book, The Way of the Superior Man. And there was a chapter in there that talked about different versions of if you're on a project and it no longer inspires you. And it kind of goes through like five or six different examples of it. And this is a Sunday, I'm in a coffee shop reading it, and I start crying. It's like, that's it. It's just time for me to leave. And in that moment, like everything just washed away. I realized I wasn't a bad guy. I wasn't a bad partner. I just kind of stayed, you know, too long, or long enough to realize that it was time to leave. You know, very careful about that because I probably needed that time to be very clear that it's time. And so I come home from the coffee shop and I sit my wife down in our bedroom and I said, hey, I kind of got something to share with you. And I said, I think it's time for me to leave trading. And you got to understand, like I was a partner for many years. I did really well and, you know, created a lot of abundance out of that. And so on some level, I didn't really know how she'd react. But I also knew that I wasn't going back to the trading floor. Like this was where we were going, or this is where I was going. And her response was, yes, like, but are we okay? Do we need to sell the house? Like I'll do whatever we need to do. She was prepared to for my happiness. You know, it was one of those moments where I'm not sure anyone has shown me more grace than she showed me. And I didn't realize how much I needed it until she showed up that way. And it's never about her. I mean, she was asking the question just to like, what do we need to do so that you feel good? It's like, no, we're good. Like, we're not in any kind of financial stress. I just need to leave this and we're totally fine. And so I kind of put that to rest. And so then we decided, tried to figure out where we wanted to move to. Because at that point, it's like, I don't want to live in Chicago anymore. I loved it, but I don't love the winter. Let's go someplace with better weather and we'll kind of figure the rest out. So we end up landing in Austin in 2013.
Why Austin?
We actually had been here a couple times, but we had friends who had said, hey, a lot of people move in Austin, you should check it out. So we came down here and fell in love with it. We looked at San Diego and kind of North San Diego and a few other places that just weren't really close, to be honest with you. San Diego, like La Jolla, seemed pretty cool.
My favorite place other than here.
Yeah, I get that. And if we didn't have kids, we probably would have moved there. But I felt like the family support was much stronger here in Austin. And so we moved to Austin. And from there, I transitioned from trading into coaching. I was really into fitness, nutrition, done some life coaching. So I was starting to take on some clients and just work through that and was really loving that and wanted to come to Austin and open up a gym and start that kind of practice. And it just, like, as you know, I talked to a real estate guy about finding a gym and it just, the things weren't lining up for me. It's like, I want to do this. I want to coach. I want to work with people. I want to connect with people. And I love the coaching. But I didn't see that avenue of really being, I felt like I was going to be overworked. I had just gotten out of a great career where I had a lot of financial flexibility. I didn't want to go into building something that, you know, it's really hard to make money in gyms. And so I had to look at that, like, is this really going to create the type of, you know, financial outcome that is going to get me excited? Because there's the element of connecting with people, but it also needs to be a business. And the answer was no. And at that time, there was an opportunity to be involved with an upstart pro fitness league called the National Pro Grid League. And it was kind of an offshoot of CrossFit. It was really taking CrossFit and putting it into a team atmosphere, much like a sports league. There are 8 teams in different cities. There were 11 men, 11 women on each team. And we would basically have 11 races within a match that would take an hour and a half. And then, you know, the winner would get 2 points, the loser would get 1 point, and whoever ended up with the most points wins. It was really cool, really fun. It just, the league wasn't financially sound. And the guy who created it, God bless him, he really wanted to make a splash. And part of it was his ego because he left CrossFit and he wanted to show those guys. And we just didn't have enough money. So we lasted for 3 seasons.
And you were an athlete or owner?
I was an owner of the Phoenix team. I appreciate you asking if I was an athlete.
Makes me feel could be. Definitely could be.
and so I did that for 3 years. And that ended 2014, 15, and 16. It was an expensive venture, you know, owning the team that didn't, you know, that continued to lose money. But what I found was I loved connecting with people. I loved having a team. I loved taking care of the team. I loved finding out what they needed to perform at their best. And I took it very seriously. And I think our athletes were grateful for how we took care of them. That transitions into kind of a period where I wouldn't say I was lost, but I was kind of untethered. I was feeling, you know, the after effects of that were, you know, I just lost a lot of money.
How'd that hit you?
I was pretty hard on myself. I'm a big feel guy, intuition guy. And so I do a lot of investments. And that's how I kind of make my money nowadays, is through different private equity investments in real estate. And so I'm not a traditional deep dive analysis due diligence. I'm more feel. And back then I was way more feel. Now I know to bring in others who are really good at that to look at it from a different angle.
The non-feeling part of it.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it can really crunch the numbers and ask some different questions than I'll ask. But back then it was a lot of feel. And
how in touch with God are you? It's the questions that we would ask.
Yes.
And someone else like, okay, but what's the profit and loss statement looking? And not to say that you don't know what that looks like or whatever, but
no, but I was way less interested in that.
Right.
And just had less understanding of how all the numbers worked, because the numbers can be whatever they want them to be. And then it's like, what is reasonable and what is not? But it's interesting. No one's ever asked me that question, how it made me feel. And like I said, I was really hard on myself. It's like, there you go. You just fucking, you know, you didn't really think about this. You got excited about it. You put this money in, and I had some real, negative feelings about the whole experience. And it wasn't until, I think it was about 18 months later that I had met some people here in Austin, and they were asking a lot of questions that were inside me, but I didn't realize it. And so, do you know who Kyle Kingsbury is?
I've heard his name, but
yeah. So Kyle came to Austin in like 2017 to work as like Aubrey Marcus's kind of assistant guinea pig at Onnit. And long story short, I was in a room with him, Aubrey, Tim Ferriss happened to be there, Lance Armstrong, and a couple other people. We were doing NAD plus IV therapy. Mm-hmm. What I took from that experience was the conversations these guys were having were blowing my mind. It was anywhere from psychedelics to consciousness to biohacking to just all the things that I had dabbled in a little bit, but I was not in that world. And so over the course of 8 days, this is how many times we kind of did the IV therapy, I would go home, listen to podcasts, read books, watch YouTube videos, and I kind of went on this other path. And as I did that, I started to meet a lot of interesting people, which is where the podcast came from. It's like, I'm having all these conversations one-on-one. So many of my friends would benefit from these conversations. So how can I get it out to a wider audience? Is that that's where the podcast came from. And when I sat down with the guy who helped me launch it, we were talking about the Grid League, and it was the first time I realized that there was so much that came out of it, and that I would do it, absolutely would spend the money again, because it's really clarified for me how important connection is for me. And that's what I'm meant for in whatever form it takes, but that's why I'm here. And so I was able to really, you know, kind of alchemize those feelings. And instead of giving the canned answer to someone about how was the experience, like, oh, it was great, I learned a lot, blah, 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 bullshit, I was actually able to say, you know, it wasn't a great financial investment, but I, at that point in my life, with the exception of trading and when I was playing hockey growing up, it was as alive as I've ever felt, like being a part of that experience. Mm. And so that's what I was orienting towards. Like, that's what life can feel like. That's what life could feel like. And that's where I want to be. All to say, so that was 2019 is when I first started having conversations with people on the podcast, and I launched in early 2020. So that's a little bit, I mean, it's kind of a bit of my journey to how I got here. And it is kind of broad strokes. And, you know, there's I don't know if we talked about this when you came on the podcast, but in 2018, so mind you, 2018 is actually when I met Kyle. So October 1st, 2018, I was in Las Vegas for the mass shooting, the Route 91 festival mass shooting. And that was my big awakening. Here I am at the Jason Aldean concert with a friend. And then, you know, the shots are fired. We're not sure what it is. It sounds like electrical wires that are shorting, more shots. People are starting to take cover. We take cover and we're behind the tour bus. And imagine the shots are coming towards us. There's a tour bus in between us. And then behind us is where the stage is. We were there, I don't know, 7-8 minutes. It was the first time in my life that I actually surrendered. I didn't know what was going on. We didn't know if it was one guy, if it was a terrorist group. We didn't have any way to really protect ourselves. And so if, you know, if it were a group and they were to come on the grounds, like we were fucked. And so I just kind of made peace with that. Like, this is where we're at right now. And I also realized that all the coping strategies and all the things I did to protect myself were not there. All the friends I had and those relationships, as amazing as they are, they weren't coming to save me. And I, in some way, had reflected back on if this is it, fuck. Like, just real disappointment in how I had been living my life and what I had been chasing and that mountain I had been climbing and the boxes of success that I had been checking off, doing all the things that we're told to chase, and had done that beyond anything I could have ever imagined. And it was not close to it. It's not why I was on this earth. And so when I left, you know, when I was able to leave that scene, I met Kyle 2 days later in that NAD session. And that just stoked the fires of like, why am I here? You know, without knowing, even for 18 months, I didn't even realize that's what was happening, but I was so curious about why I'm here that I, you know, I was on this really this existential inquiry of, what is my role here on earth? Because it's not to make money. That is a part of something that can, it's a part of who I am, but it was for so long had been my North Star. And that awakening wasn't without its own challenges with my relationship, because my wife's like, what the fuck's going on? Like, you're like, I'm detached in a different way. I'm so focused on trying to figure this thing out and get to the bottom of, you know, my purpose, that I'm alienating her. And, you know, within this world is plant medicine. And so I'm doing some of that. And she's like, oh, okay. Like, are you safe? And, you know, in Austin, there's a bit of a polyamory scene, nothing we've ever even discussed, considered, whatever, but you know, some of the people I'm hanging out with, like, they're very open about it. And so she's worried about that. Like, is he gonna leave me for this other world? And I'm still so intent on fixing myself, getting myself right, that there was that alienation. And even with my kids, and it's taken me a long time to kind of integrate all of this, because that stuff is so fascinating and it can really, you know, pull you in. And without, you know, the proper, I guess, clarity on like what's its purpose in my world and what are the things that are truly important. And it's like prioritizing the family piece had been a real challenge for me. And it wasn't until the last year, and in particular the last 3 months, but I'd say the last year, there was a big shift for me in being able to bring kind of all these worlds together and to be able to show up in a way where there's deep connection with my wife and my kids. And I'm engaged in the parts of my mission that are really important to me. And that was probably the biggest challenge for me, was thinking that these things were separate in a way. You know, I was on this journey of caring for the family and providing all the things I provide. And my wife had come to me a number of different times and said, I love all that stuff and I'm so grateful. And all I want is your heart. And so for me, my interpretation was, part of it was, in some ways, it always felt like that wasn't good enough. And that's not what she was saying. But that's how I could take it if I wasn't in the right, if I wasn't feeling great about me. But it was also like, I felt like I had to choose. And so I put this stuff aside and really worked on being a great husband and being a great dad. And that works for a little while. You can fucking go through the motions and do all the right things and show up. But there's a major part of I think what being a man is all about is being on mission. And I was missing that. And I think for the past 3 years, largely was just floating, kind of untethered. I was like both untethered and stuck because I didn't have any kind of through line about where I was going. And so as I had this second awakening, which happened right before you and I had that beautiful podcast.
Incredible.
Yeah. I can't wait for that to come out.
Too.
I was able to really see very clearly how these worlds really support one another. And that was a fucking relief, because having to choose, you can't. Because she's not getting my authentic self. She's getting some part of me. And that's not even real. You know, again, I'm trying to fix myself versus just working together in what are our patterns and how can we work on our patterns and how can we give space for each of us to work through that stuff. And, you know, my wife I don't even know how to describe her. I mean, on the one hand, she's very patient. All she wants is my heart. And for so long, I haven't known how to give that to her. I heard this quote recently from Rumi, and I'm not going to quite get it right, but something to the effect of, God will break your heart over and over again until it stays open. It was like, I could just imagine, just like every time I took it as my heart, like my perception was my heart was broken, just cover it back up. And it was like just over and over, where that's just the story that I'm telling myself. And it's without proper communication and sitting down with, you know, without the knives out, and to really get to know one another is, I mean, we've been married almost 24 years. It's a revelation that we're finally coming around to this. You can imagine, it got really rough over a year ago. I would say there was about a year period where I didn't think we were gonna make it. And I understand why people leave relationships, and sometimes it's absolutely the right thing to do. And in our case, we could have convinced ourselves that it was the right thing to do. And I just see now that because there was something within us that believed in us, but also believed in, like, I just knew, even though there were the triggers and there was the resentments and in that, I knew that her soul is beautiful and pure. And it's just, I haven't been able to connect to that. And so what is my role in that? And that has been my work is the biggest part of is really to be truly vulnerable with her to the point of, you know, I so identified and due to a lesser degree, but it's still so much a part of me right now of being the provider and continuing to push what that means and to continue to show up in bigger ways as the provider and the protector. And to have to go to her this fall and say, look, we have all these resources, we have all of these properties, we have this and that, and I'm completely financially stressed because we don't have a ton of cash on hand. And the mortgages and all these things are still coming month after month. And so the ego part of me didn't want to share that. And in the past, I haven't. I've just figured it out and worked through it. Probably three different times. I've probably needed to have that conversation. And so in going to her, I didn't want to expose that part of me that felt like a failure. Like, dude, because I was beating myself up already. Like, how could you fuck this up? Like, you have plenty of resources and here you are. You're stuck right now. And fortunately, I have an amazing coach that really encouraged me to share this with her. And I knew how she would respond, but there's still the part of the ego that is terrified of she's going to see right through your bullshit that you're, you know, again, there's 24 years of like data that, you know, I've shown up, and there's still this part that is afraid that she's going to leave or she's going to think you're a piece of shit or whatever, because you got us in this position. And she was like, just like when I went to her, when I was leaving trading, like, what do we need to do? Like, you can't be feeling like this. Like, we're in too good a place to, I mean, this should not be how you feel. And I said, we don't need to do anything right now. I think I just needed to share that with you so that we are working together, so that when we want to make a bigger investment in something that you actually know, you, like, all I was doing was keeping her from knowing me. And there was a part of me that knew that, and there was a part that was still afraid to let her in. And I know that for her to get my full heart, she has to know me fully. And so to be able to share these things with her has really changed our relationship. And now I can be quite frank with her about how I'm feeling with things. And as you can imagine, there was a real weight that lifted when I had shared that with her, and things have continued. It was almost like when that happened, something turned on in my brain that allowed me to find new sources of revenue too, which is pretty interesting. And then find ways to, you know, move on from different real estate properties that frankly were more ego-based than this is kind of what we're meant to be doing. And what is so interesting, and I was sharing with you before we got on about our recent trip to the Sensei property in Lanai, Hawaii. We've been going to Idaho for 15 years. We go up there for 2 months every summer. Incredible golf course. It's on the lake. Beautiful community. So fun. Like, when I'm there, it's like, I can't believe I get to do this. And I'm there with a bunch of friends. They're always up there for, you know, 6, 8, 12 weeks. And it costs money. And the annual dues are expensive. And then there's the HOA. And then there's the other HOA. And it's a big nut every year. And we just do it because we love it. And this is what we do. And I started to realize that there's a part of me that stagnates when I'm there and maybe even regresses. And then it takes me another month to get back into the rhythm when I get back here to Austin. And
well, 15 years ago is before 2013, which is related to your old life.
Yes, very much. And I was still holding on to that part of it. And on the outside, this place looks amazing. And it's everything you want, summer camp for adults. But I just lose a bit of who I am and what that mission is. And again, for the last number of years, there's a part of me that has needed that checkout, because I wasn't ready to kind of move on. And so I bring up the Hawaii property because I'm sitting there on our deck, listening to the birds, the wind, there's a little bit of rain. And I just realized, like, this is where we're meant to live. Not that property in particular, but in a place that feels sacred. And why wouldn't we aspire to that? Why wouldn't we manifest living in something where you don't need anything? You're just there and you can feel it. And so it's been a big shift that we're putting that property on the market in Idaho, and it will sell like quite quickly. And we're closing that chapter of our life. And you know, on the one hand, it alleviates all that financial stress in one stroke of the pen. But it also orients us towards what this next chapter is. And I'm telling you, you know, the moments when you're able to get away, you know, we have three kids, 21, 18, 16. When Peyton and I are able to get away together, and it's been a little while since we have, interestingly enough, but it's almost like why people go into a plant medicine journey. You get to see what happens, especially when you're in a place like Sensei, of what that connection's like without all the noise. And that was really what I pulled away. We had such an amazing thing. We felt so connected. There was no anything that felt off. And it's a reminder that is the kind of heart of really why I'm here, is that relationship and everything that flows out of it. And to have that dedicated time to experience that, now when we're back here, I get to see and pay attention to the contrast of what happens when these other pieces come in. And those other pieces are necessary. Doing the podcast, coming on a podcast, working through investments, playing golf, working out, like all the things. Can those things just be secondary? And what would that look like? And so I love that we had this, you know, this trip right in the middle of, as I was having, you know, as I said, in this expansiveness, to drop us both into that. And, you know, just both of us had so much gratitude for being there together. And I don't think we could have understood the impact, and still not, of what that, you know, those 6-7 days have meant to us as we go forward.
You know, it's so interesting how vulnerably you speak about all of this. Mm. You're like, first of all, you mentioned, you know, I don't know if my wife and I would have made it. You mentioned, you know, I was, some part of me not too long ago was focused on the wrong things, and the properties that I had were an ego. Mm-hmm. Then you say, you know, I don't know. I like the person you just described yourself as is so relatable to so many people, but not many people are willing to state the truth of their experience. You're like, I wasn't being a fully transparent with my wife. Like, that's not something most people would get on a podcast and admit. That's not something most people would say to another human being to begin with. Where does that come from?
Thank you for that. On some level, it's very just cathartic to be honest. And I also know that, you know, before I started my podcast, you know, Kyle was a big inspiration for me, and that's how he always showed up. And I would argue that he kind of overshares some things, and there have been times when I've overshared, and my intention when I do kind of overshare is I just want to be honest with people, and I want them to know really that we're all a bit fucked up. And I know this through my own experience, and I think that the podcast was a great way for me to kind of level that thought that Cal's got it all figured out. I want his life. Da, da, da. It's like, maybe on the outside, but you got no idea what's going on the inside. And it's not for sympathy, but it's like, look, like, I'm far from perfect. And by the way, these are the ways that I'm far from perfect. And this is what I'm doing to try to work through that. And this is what has worked for me. And this was me, didn't work for me, but this is why I did that. And it's like to just share with people, to coach in a way, not through go do this, but like, this is me. And this is my guest. And this is the way we work through different parts. And really, I only bring on people, with a few exceptions, that I feel like will go there in a sense that they don't have to share to the degree that I do. But I want someone that's really the kimono's open, and they're gonna be relatable. That's probably the most important thing for me in the podcast. Because look, you could look at me and say, you know, you retired from trading at 41 and you don't have to work, and like, that's not relatable. Yeah, that's not relatable, but that's not the experience that I'm sharing with you. I'm sharing, like, I'm a real person in a relationship with kids, with friends, with businesses, with all these things. And this is how these things show up in my life. And I love bringing on athletes that people are like, oh, that person's the best, you know. And granted, I had Lance on, and this is just divided on him, but to show the human side and what's really hard for him is important to me. And so it's just a way, you know, that's what I love about the podcast. What I love about having conversations when I'm playing golf with people is I go there with people, not every time. I mean, I know I have some pretty good discernment, but I open the door for people to say, look, whatever you need, I'm here. I can hold space for whatever's needed. And you can imagine the place we go in Idaho, some of the people I play golf with are super successful, super wealthy, and they're not in the spaces that you and I are in. And I feel like I'm very much a bridge for them to start to open up to that part of themselves. And so I think that's super important, because I know that what's in your bank account or what's on social media has nothing to do with your happiness and where you're at in life. And so I try to open the door for that for people. And I find that, you know, I have some amazing relationships with people, and sometimes it's just for a round of golf or two, but I've made a connection and an impact in a way that they can follow up with me in 2 years and say, hey, can I share something with you? Like, I want to be that guy because I know how important that guy is. And I have those guys and gals in my life. Because when we're stuck carrying these things, we don't know how to sort through them, and it becomes a really heavy lift. And then you get in a situation like I was in where I was in financial stress and I would just carry it, and other things would come out of that, which aren't great, the way I'm showing up or not showing up. And I would solve for it. So it's almost like, well, I figured it out. I can figure it out again. And yeah, you can, but is that the type of, you know, energetics I want going between me and my wife? And fuck no.
At what cost?
Yeah, what cost?
And it's so interesting because I was talking to someone on the run today about this, how when you face your own insecurities, other people who have insecurities, namely everyone, then open up to you and tell you theirs.
Yes.
Because they know, oh, this person's good with themselves. So therefore, I'm going to put some of my insecurities on them so maybe they can help me. And we can.
Yes. So, you're a safe space because you are, quote unquote, flawed as well. Right. Because again, on the outside, we make all these, you know, projections that people are exactly what you see and there's no shit below. It's like, that is, every single person has shit they deal with. And it's just, who are those people that are trustworthy, that can, that, you know, kind of explore their own humanity and the things that, you know, make them less than maybe what they want to be. And I just think the work that you and I and other men and women that have a show that are having these conversations, I think it just lets everyone's shoulders drop a little bit. Be like, right. Okay, like there's, I have a really a close friend of mine I've known for, I don't know, 15 years, kind of CrossFit days. And he has become a super successful online fitness coach. And he has the body of an Adonis. And he has the personality of someone who is just amazing and authentic. And he's one of my favorite humans. And he's started to open up about his, some of the stuff he had around his own body image, where anybody would look at him and say, never not seen your body look perfect. Now, maybe it's 10 pounds more, 10 pounds less, but it's always looks incredible. And he's shared how it has been such a hyper focus of his around body image. And for him, he's got like a million followers on Instagram. For him to share that.
He shared that publicly or with
yes,
you?
Yes, he shared it publicly. And he shared some things with me separately. That his programming is amazing and will do people a lot of good. What he's sharing is far greater than any of the reps and sets that he's putting out there. And he knows that, and it feels really good for him to share it because he's been carrying this. He's public facing and he's putting out this incredible product. He's struggling with this piece here. And like, you know, it's like, once you just put it out there, it no longer controls you. It's a thing. And now I get to work with this.
Yeah. I mean, what we're talking about is the truest essence of what it means to be human. And I tried to make money. I tried to build my body. I tried to run faster. I tried to get girls. All of it fails in comparison to the thing that you can't see, which is your own peace and your own presence. And the truth of your experience and telling the truth and releasing those burdens, releasing the shame, releasing all the guilt. There's no scorecard for that. Well, there wasn't until I discovered David Hawkins' Map of Consciousness.
Oh, that's
your
right.
Podcast. Yeah, yeah. It's like how—
Aside from that.
But it's remarkable how the actual thing that matters is something you can't see.
See, that's so interesting because I've landed on that as well. It's like all the things that you can measure, they're not the thing.
They're someone else's game.
Yeah, and it's those other things that are just a feeling. That's where, you know, we really, I mean, that's where I'm orienting towards. And now, again, do these other things, the scorecard, and do it until, well, maybe that is all you need.
Right.
But for most people, eventually they find through their own experience that that's not the thing. And it's not like you just abandon it, you just put it in its proper place. And I think that's the key for a lot of people. They're like, oh, if I had X million dollars, I'd be totally fine. It's like,
do it.
Try it.
Do
it. Yeah. It's, yeah. Yeah, damn. It's so interesting that we're inundated with this message, these messages at all times. In every, I mean, ways that we don't even realize that we're getting fed this stuff. And it really, it takes real work and real intention and surrounding yourself with the right people to start to just A, become aware of it. And then it's just like to unpack them. And, you know, like I like the Don Miguel Ruiz with the four agreements is like unlocking these agreements one by one and just like examining them. And I remember thinking about when I was first reading his stuff and he talks about like, you need to basically undo each of these agreements. And I'm like, you know, here I am, the fucking alpha. Like, how am I going to undo all these? How am I ever going to get to the end? It's like, no, brother, it's not about getting to the end. It's about being aware and being in the practice of seeing them and then unlocking them and then moving on. And when another one comes up, you work with that one.
That's right. I was talking to someone this morning, 24-year-old kid, about, I want to find my purpose and I want to understand what I'm here to do. And I'm like, yes, like you're in the right place. And also you find that by figuring out every place right now that you're not telling the truth.
Ooh.
Where are you lying to yourself, right? Ooh. Are you in this job right now because your parents are telling you that this is the right job for you? Are you in this friendship because you're saying to yourself, these are the friends that I've always had and I need to have for the rest of my life? Are you in a relationship where you actually don't like the person at the deepest level, but it looks good on the surface? Where are you lying? That's how you find your purpose.
I'm sure I've heard that before in some way, but it just landed way different. That is such a simple question that has so much complexity to it. You know, I mean, the first thing that came to mind for me is, well, I don't want to overshare here, but one of my kids is struggling with a few things. And like just putting that to him, like, where are you lying to yourself? Mm. Because I know he is, and he knows he is, but he's not aware that that's a thing. And it gives me something to actually sit with, because as on mission and as clear as I am right now, oh, there are areas where I'm lying to myself. What are those areas? Excuse me. Yeah. And what would it mean to be honest with myself about that? Holy shit. Yeah. That's like a daily check-in, I feel like.
It's going to the gym.
Yeah.
For your consciousness.
Yeah, it's like up on my, I see in my office on the whiteboard, like, where are you lying to yourself today?
Yeah. Or how could I tell the truth in a deeper way?
Yeah.
Because it's not like you were lying by omitting information to your wife.
Right.
But you were deepening the truth by actually saying it to her.
Yeah.
And that's to frame it in a positive way.
Yeah.
It's like,
I like that idea.
Yeah. It's both. It's like omitting the truth in some way is a lie.
Yeah.
And also let's deepen the truth by saying the thing that we don't have to say, but we actually do gain by saying it. Even if it feels like on the surface, we're losing our ego or we're losing credibility with our wife. We're losing,
yeah.
But the truth is you're gaining connection.
Connection. And with that comes integrity. That's it. Like, where am I not in integrity, or where can I be more in integrity? I mean, I think about, like, again, this may sound silly to people, but like this property in Idaho is, again, I don't know that I had the capacity to be in integrity up until recently, because I just didn't have the awareness. But now, knowing what I know, I will not be in integrity to be there. And it has nothing to do with, I love the people up there. I have a lot of fun with the people up there. And if anybody up there listens to this, I mean this with love. But, you know, I think about the journeys that each of them are on. And I don't, as much as I can know, right? I don't know shit about really what their journey is, but I can make an approximation. There are but a handful, and I mean less than five, of, call it 30 guy friends I have up there that I play golf with, that are really curious about the stuff that I'm really curious about. And it comes back to the whole, you know, you're the average of the five people you hang out with. And it's just, it sounds cliche, but boy, I just know that a lot changes for me when I find myself not anchored with those that are, they're not an echo chamber or anything like that. It's the people that are asking different questions. And when I'm around them, it's different than when I'm up in Idaho. And Idaho is fun, and it's the most fun I have playing golf. And
you don't have to rationalize it to me.
Yeah.
You know? You know, like, you're rationalizing it to yourself.
Yeah,
for, I feel bad. 15 years, and you don't want to put them down in any way.
I want to be very clear about that.
Yeah, I get that. I get it fully. And you don't need to. You can make a decision and say, this is the decision, and I love everyone from the past, and this is it.
Yeah.
Clean slate.
You're right.
And, you know, I think that there's such a power to owning the truth of your experience. And not sugarcoating it or trying to make people feel good so that you could be more okay.
Totally.
It's like, just say the truth of what you feel.
I'm glad you brought that up. That has been a really challenging part of my life.
Why?
You know, part of it is, you know, this idea of wanting to be liked. And I'm sure part of it is all the things I tried to do for my dad's approval/love when I was a kid. And so that stuff, that pattern is pretty deeply embedded. I'd like to say I don't want to let people down, but I don't think anybody really wants to let people down. That's my framing of actually not telling the truth, and I'm trying to sugarcoat it. What's interesting is I know that when I meet somebody and they are very clear and they don't sugarcoat shit, at first it's a little bit like you're not used to it, and it's like, God damn, do I appreciate that. And those people inspire me to be more direct and to speak with more clarity. But there is that part of me that, you know, there's also a part like, I've done really well financially. And so there's times I go through like, I've struggled in the past with not feeling like I deserved it. Mm. And so in that state, kind of giving away mostly giving away my time. And when I realized I had been doing that, you know, I got super clear on, no, you've worked hard, you deserve what you have. And those are just things anyway. Your time, like, that's it. And do not sacrifice that for someone you don't feel compelled to spend time with. And so I've gotten better about that. I could be more clear, but I am more clear than I have been. And so I'm working in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But that has been a challenge, I would say.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. On the piece of the friends, I think one of the best, most important practices that I've instilled is whenever I spend time with people, checking in with myself for a minute right after, be like, what was my experience of that?
Mm.
And if it wasn't joy, peace, or love, that person is not someone I'm going to consciously go out of my way to spend time with again. That doesn't mean I'm never going to spend time with them again. Mm-hmm. It just means that I want to be aware of my feeling directly after spending time with people. And if we can do that and then we can act on it, we're in a completely different state. We're not going to Idaho anymore.
No.
No. We're going straight to Hawaii.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. This feels like a major kind of transition time for me and my wife and my family. My family's been going there for 15 years. The kids are all on board with it. That made it easier. But it comes back to this question of who are we? What's important to us? And then what are the things that are going to keep us in integrity with that? And do we have the courage to let go of the things that are more, not quite vanity stuff, but it's the ego, it's missing out on it's like there's, God, it's like when I really drill down to it, it's like, again, I don't want to offend anyone, but it's the same up there every summer.
Right. I'm going to give you my example of it so I can root it in something that maybe people who are 20 to 30
yes.
can resonate with. When I go home to New York, I made the decision yesterday, I am not spending it in my childhood bedroom because I know that is going to create the same patterns that happened when I was growing up with my mom and dad. And I love my mom and dad, and I'm completely clear in every way that I can be with them, and they have no trigger of me, and that's not why I'm not doing it. It's because I want to create a new reality of I'm a man, and I can get my own place when I'm in town, and I love you so much, and we'll see each other often, and this is just the truth of my experience. And so that is something that I think is really important for people maybe in their later 20s or earlier 20s and want to separate themselves. That doesn't mean that you're trying to run from a trigger or run from, it's this is what is going down and I am stepping into a new version of myself. So I want to create this dynamic.
I love that. And you know what that brings to mind? Again, this may be a piece that's a bit more relatable. I hear stories about people who got to go back home for this and that, all these, when they're married and they have kids and they're still expected from mom and dad to do these things. And, you know, fortunately for me, I've never had to deal with that. Like I've always just done what I've wanted and my parents have been supportive of it, but I know that's not necessarily the norm. And what would it mean if you actually didn't want to fucking go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas and you wanted to start your own traditions? Or like, do you have the courage to sit down mom and dad and set them straight? There's a million different versions of that within that dynamic of mom and dad. And I'm just curious, like, how many people listening right now are not in integrity with whatever those things are with mom and dad, and do they have the courage to be honest about it?
Yeah, and the pushback that you might get is, why are you being selfish? So what do you say to that pushback of, why are you being selfish for choosing preferences that are different than the family's preferences or mom and dad's preferences?
Well, then you could turn around and say, why are you being selfish and expecting me to come home? You know, it's like, I want to have my own experience. Like, there's, again, I'm not speaking from my personal experience, but I just, when I hear that, I'm like, fuck, man, like, you're a grown ass man, you know? And are you expecting something from your parents, like some sort of, you know, something in their will? If that's the case, then you really got to look at it, bro, because that is no way to live your life. But again, people have their, make their own choice. I just, yeah, it just, it kind of bothers me to see that. It's like, I, and again, my experience is very different. So I don't know what it's like. It seems very easy from where I sit. I know that's not the case. You know, people, there's a lot tied up in that with their parents. And just like kids can pull on the strings to make you feel guilty, mom and dad know how to do it too. And so there's going to be a lot of that. But really the question is, can you be in integrity with that?
Yeah.
And what does that look like? And maybe you need to make your way there instead of going full on like you, I don't know, you know, but I feel like changing that, because all that, a lot of what happens there is resentment. Yeah. You're resentful towards your parents because they're making you do something you don't want to do, yet they're not making you do anything. You're doing it and they're getting the blame. And so what, it's just reframing what's going on. Yeah. Again, I wish, and I don't necessarily wish, but I can't speak from my own personal experience. So again, it seems a little bit easier than it probably is, but I would encourage anyone listening. You have the opportunity to create real freedom in your life. That is one area I think a lot of people get stuck. You know, some people have a little less freedom in maybe what their job is and they need to pay the bills. They're good at the job, or it's a tough job market, whatever. There's ways to move the needle there, but there are some areas where we can have some real sovereignty in our lives. It's just we have to be curious. And back to that lovely prompt that you had, and I don't know what version of it we're using, but we'll just say, you know, where can you be more truthful with yourself? You know, what would it mean if you were?
Yeah. It'd be more freedom.
Yeah.
More love for yourself.
Yes. You're showing up for yourself by supporting yourself. That's why it's like so important when people have daily practices of working out every day or moving every day, of doing a cold plunge, of doing a meditation. When you start to stack these different things throughout your day and you do it on a daily basis, or maybe some things you're on a weekly or every other day, the message you're sending to yourself is, I believe in you and I'm showing up for you. And the inverse is when you're not doing those things, it's pretty easy to feel like you're a piece of shit.
Yes.
But I found that when I've been consistent and done those things, I just have this belief in myself, because I am showing up for myself, and it's just this self-perpetuating thing. And so I think by doing these things, by standing up for yourself, by advocating for yourself, you're your own biggest fan. Because we all know we can be our own biggest critic. We generally are. And so what if we could balance that out and be more of a fan than a critic all the time? That's an interesting concept that I hadn't really thought about until just now. It's like, and how can we show up as a fan? Like I said, the daily practices are so important, and they don't have to be 35, 40 minute meditation. It could be sitting down for 2 minutes every day in a particular spot, in your house, in your apartment, wherever, outside. And you know, you're just adding a few every day. There's two or three things you do every day, and it's your way to show support for yourself and the journey you're on. And it could be any number of things.
Build trust with yourself.
Yes.
And that's what we're doing. And it's really coaching. You're coaching yourself. And you know what? I've had this thought, this whole conversation about what you and I are and what I think people who listen to this podcast are or trying to become. And that is a healer.
Mm-hmm.
And you're healing with your presence. You're healing with the way you show up. You're healing with the way you're coaching yourself and becoming a fan and falling down and then admitting that you're falling down. You're holding space for people.
I love that. Yeah.
How can people be better healers?
You got to do your own work and, you know, take what you see from others to get ideas about what that may look like for you and be curious about all the different things. There's a million different ways to go about your own healing, but it's, you know, doing that work, creating awareness around the things that need to be healed. And then it's just being in process of that journey. And I don't know that there's ever, you know, a point where you're like, okay, that part's healed. It's just, it becomes more aligned with who you are in your soul's purpose. And so it's more about, again, I think back to that old framework that I used with the agreements and how can I unlock them all. It's about being in process of it. And that willingness to look at all the things, and some things are really hard to look at. And so maybe that's going to take more healing for you to get into those deeper parts. But it's to be curious about yourself and the places that you aren't being honest with yourself and seeking out different people, practitioners, healers, modalities that can help move you through that into a healthier, more integrated state. And I think it comes with curiosity. I think that was one of my biggest challenges was, not that I wasn't a know-it-all, but everything was pretty black and white. It was like yes or no. And it's like, actually, back to the important shit's not yes or no. It's very gray and it's not measurable. So how can I, you know, be curious about my own life, about other people's journey, about this is my truth through my experience and your truth could be completely different. And that's exactly the way it should be. Your experience is yours alone. And so I think stepping out of this rigid black and white world and into what is my experience teaching me and can I allow others to have a different experience and be okay with that and not have to be right? And I think that's like when I started to loosen the grip on that, which was, you know, 6-7 years ago is when it came into my awareness. I would say it's continuing to be a work in progress, but there's just way less anxiety about having to be right. And you're just, you're in conversation, you're in connection versus I'm trying to pitch you on my idea, you're pitching me on yours. We're never going to agree because they're our experience. And it's just like being up for that. And again, the healing journey is more about a state of being and not a sense of completion on any of that. And so that's really challenging for a lot of people, particularly men, because we like completion. We like to check that box. Yeah. So that's what we're being called to, something that's, you know, more, I guess, on the feminine side.
Yes. And it's like you do reach a point where you are more jacked.
Yeah.
And people are like, this person is jacked. And the process of being jacked is a never-ending process that is constantly going on, that if you stop doing it at any point, you will be out of shape. Yes. And so just like working out is a process of you have to step into the arena every day, every week, every month. And if you don't for some time, that's okay. And you can just get back on the horse whenever you want. And so healing and looking at your own emotional stuff to figure out where you're not free, to figure out where you can be more loving to yourself and the world around you, that's also a process that is never ending and will constantly present you with new circumstances to reveal where you're not free. And that's the purpose of life.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I appreciate the distinction and I appreciate that you're like, yeah, this is not something, oh, I'm healed. I'm fully healed.
Yeah, I'm good.
but I do think it's worth pointing out. And you know this because people come to you for questions, for advice on their own life. I'm sure just based on your presence, it's not something that everybody has. You are further down along that path than many others. And I said to my girlfriend after the fact, I was like, I spoke to this dude, Cal, on his podcast, and his presence was in the top 1% of 1% of all people that I've spoke to. And that's why I wanted you here, because presence is so closely related to freedom.
And, oh, yeah.
And the more present someone is, the more free they are. Why? Because they're not having the stories in their head about the way it should be or what happened in their past. They're just here with you. And I want to be in the presence of people who are present and people who are free.
Yes. I love that. That is really well said. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, when you're able to drop into presence, it is, there's a freedom there, because you're not wishing for anything besides what's happening in this moment. Yeah.
That's powerful. And that's what I wish for every human being, to increase their own presence, to increase their own freedom, because that feels so much better than big biceps. That feels so much better than, I'm guessing, $1 million in your bank account feels. And I just wish it and hold it so strongly that every human being listening to this and every human being in the world who's not listening to this feels the level of peace and freedom that I know we both feel in our bodies right now.
I love that.
Thank you for coming here, man.
Oh, such a pleasure. Such an honor to come on here with you, man. I love this. Yeah, just, I mean, I've heard your podcast before, but to be able to sit across from you, and I mean, I've been on a lot of podcasts. Not once did you say anything as you gave me the space, no matter where I was going with it. And that felt amazing. So I'm super grateful for that. And yeah. Yeah, you're special, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate you so much. And where should we send people to connect with you further?
Well, the best place is Instagram, cal.callahan. And then my website is thegreatunlearn.com, where I have my podcast and all that good stuff.
It's an incredible podcast. Check out my episode if it's out. And I love you so much, man.
I love you, brother. Thank you. So easy.
So easy.
God damn.